We could just keep singing a while, couldn't we? There's a, I've told Chris till I know he's tired of hearing it, but there's a song he taught me that he maybe taught all of us, I don't know, but I hadn't heard it before. How Deep the Father's Love, we sang it this morning. In a long, long, long time, I haven't had a song that literally puts chills up and down my back. And it did it both times, both assemblies this morning. And I just, there's something about that song that I hate when it's over because I just want to start over and sing it again. It's an incredibly beautiful song. Lots of folks working in Vacation Bible School. I know you had a good start for planning that at 5 o'clock today. And we want to, all of us in the congregation want to express our appreciation to you for everyone for helping and being so willing to participate in that. We're looking forward to a great VBS. Also, I see that our sign-up list is completely filled up. There was one on this table right here a little earlier. And do we know anybody know anything about that particular one? There were two sign-up lists out there. New Testament sign-up list. So if anybody knows where the one on this table was, let me know. Because I think the other one's filled up, and I checked to see if one on this table was, and it's gone. So if anybody happens to know where it is, it would be good if we could find that. I may be in trouble if we don't. So anyway, if you happen to know where that is, see me afterward. I know that lots, as I talk to you, lots of folks in this congregation do lots of traveling. A lot of you work for oil companies and different companies that have business around the world, and I've kind of gotten a real kick out of talking to people and finding out where people go, because they've been lots of places that I haven't been, and we share some mutual experiences with airports and so forth, and a dislike for airports. And a little travel tip here before we begin. If you're in a place where, like lots of third world countries are this way, and small airports also, kind of like some in Arkansas, but they sometimes deplane you on the tarmac out here, and you get out of the plane and you get in a bus, and then they shuttle you into the airport. And I know that most of you have experienced that. A little travel tip, if you're in a real hurry, I notice that when people are really, really trying to get somewhere, they're in a hurry, then they'll push and shove to get off that plane so they can get on that bus first. That's really not the best thing to do if you're in a hurry. The best thing to do is wait and let everybody else get on, and then you're the last one to get on, and then when they close the doors, you're the first one to get off. So just a little travel tip there. And it took me a while to realize that. I'm kind of a slow learner. And one day when that struck me, because I was in a particular hurry and really trying to figure out how I could get, you know, to my gate where I was going quickly, then I got off that plane and started toward that bus, and then I realized, okay, if I get on that bus and get in the back, I'm going to be the last one off. And so I've learned that little travel tip. And while I was on that bus that particular day, it occurred to me that the Lord told me that a long time ago. What did he say? The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And so I got home, and I looked it up to see exactly. I thought I could remember where he used that in the context, and I found it. And then I thought, you know, I believe that Jesus applied that in more than one situation. I'm not real sure, but I think he did. And so I got my concordance down. And I looked, and sure enough, Jesus applied that in four different situations. And one of them is in Matthew chapter 20, verse 16, is the workers in the vineyard. You remember the ones that came early in the day, and they worked through the heat of the day, and then some came at daylight, some at the third hour, some at the sixth hour, some at the ninth hour, and some at the 11th hour. And then whenever he paid them, and he paid them in reverse order because he wanted to teach them something. And so he paid the ones that came last first, and he paid them the amount that he had agreed to pay the people who came at daylight. And so as it progressively got toward those folks who had worked all day, then they thought, well, he's going to pay us a lot more. And when he got there, you remember the story. Jesus is telling the story. When he got to them, he paid them the amount that he had agreed originally, and they were indignant. And he asked them, he said, isn't this what we agreed to? And is not my money mine to give as I see fit? Or are you jealous? And then he gave that line, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And then Mark chapter 9, verse 35, after the disciples had been arguing about who's the greatest, then he ended his discussion with them about that, and he said the same line again, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And then in Mark chapter 10, verse 31, when he was teaching the disciples, after the rich young ruler had walked away, and they didn't really understand what all went on there, and Jesus was talking to them about how hard it was for a rich man to go to heaven. And then he ended that by saying, and the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And then one more time in Luke chapter 13, verse 30, in response to the question that he was asked, are only a few people going to be saved? Then he ended that discussion with that same line, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And as I got through chasing these down, I was kind of impressed with how wide a variety of life situations Jesus applied this principle to. If you stop and think about the questions that he's answering and the situations that he's addressing, it's a pretty wide variety of life situations that he applies this to. And so, among other things, that certainly attests to its importance. And one more thing, it's always used as a conclusion to what he says. And you know, the conclusion is what you want people to remember when you get through. They may not remember all your arguments getting there, but you want people to remember the conclusion. And so he always gave that line as a conclusion. And that made me think of some reasons as I began to think about all these different situations and trying to make some application of what they had in common and so forth. It made me think of some reasons that I like living as a Christian. And I like following the Lord. Because there have been some times in my life when I didn't follow the Lord very closely. And I can remember back in those times in my life when I wasn't trying very hard to be very close to Jesus. And there was lots of turmoil in my life at those times. And I look now at the times that I do try to follow Jesus closely, and I see not times that are free of turmoil, but I see a lot less inside turmoil. There's still turmoil on the outside, but I see a lot less inside than what was there during other times. And that makes me stop and think that when we truly try to apply this truth as well as other truths to our lives, it takes a tremendous pressure off of us. And you know, we need some pressure taken off of us. Lots of us have high blood pressure, and lots of us, you know, are just walking around with our teeth gritted trying to think, what have I got to do next? And we wake up in the morning and we can't relax during the day because we're just going everywhere. And we need some pressure taken off of our lives, don't we? We need some times when we just slow down, stop and take a good deep breath and smell the roses along the way and not just think about what have I got to do, you know, tomorrow and today and this afternoon and so forth. This principle and applying this to our life frees us up to be serving people. And that's what it's all about. First shall be last and the last shall be first. It's kind of a euphemism for we're supposed to be serving other people. And that's the principle behind it. And it frees us up because when we begin to apply this, we don't have to be the first at everything. We don't always have to be the winner. And there can be times in our life when we actually, even though we might be able to win, we let somebody else be the winner. And when you're young, that doesn't make a bit of sense in the world. And, you know, everything is a competition. My two grandsons from Louisiana. I mean, you know, there's a couple of years that divide them, and the youngest one, he's really got a hard time because he always has to compete. I mean, everything is a competition. When they come here and visit and they ride with me, if we're in two vehicles and we get in the car, then they run to the car, get in, and say, "Papa, hurry up, let's beat them home." Everything is a competition, you know. And whenever everything is not a competition, when you don't have to prove something, when you don't have to be the first in life at everything, it takes a lot of pressure off of you. We can also truly rejoice at the accomplishments of others. You know, we find ourselves sometimes not being able to rejoice with others because we're trying to think when they're telling us something, we're either feeling sorry for ourselves or we're trying to think of something that's better that we can come back with. When we need to just stop and listen and be happy with that person and rejoice with those that rejoice. Truly be happy. You know, I think I've found out in life that it's pretty easy to be sad when people are sad. But it's more difficult to be happy when people are happy and they have a reason to be happy. In fact, I found out that it's really a true friend that can be happy when something really good happens to you in life. Have you found that there are lots of folks that if something good happens to you, you're not going to tell very many people? Because they can't rejoice. You know they can't rejoice with you. But there's a few people, maybe one or two in your life or in the world somewhere, that you can call up and you can tell them something that good that happened to you because you know they're going to be happy with you. That's all embroiled in that principle of first and last and service to others. We don't always have to win. We don't feel also it takes some pressure off because we don't feel like we have to critique everybody else. We don't have to criticize. I mean, there are some people that obviously feel like that I have to do that because they really do a good job at criticizing. And they feel a responsibility. Really, I'm really serious. I think that some of us feel like, okay, if there's something that everybody else is really happy about, I gotta find the flaw here. I gotta find the problem here because there's gotta be a problem if everybody's happy about this. And there are some folks that have gotten really very proficient at that. A few years ago, a Catholic Digest carried a story of a Franciscan monk by the name of Philip Kelly, who worked with the Puerto Rican migrant workers in New Jersey. And these migrant workers picked tomatoes for Campbell's, and they picked vegetables for Birdseye, and they picked blueberries for everybody else. And most of the workers were working with the goal and with the desire that they would accumulate enough money that they could go back home to Puerto Rico and build a house and be able to pay for that house. And one of the workers, by the name of Walter Jensen, worked the fields for 40 years. And Walter Jensen was loved by everybody. He had been around and he was kind of the grandfather of the group. And he helped everybody and gave everybody good advice and physically helped every opportunity he could. And they developed a practice that near Christmas time, each of the workers who wanted to participate in this got a pot and they put one day's wage in that pot. And then each one of them who put that day's wage in wrote their name down on a slip of paper and put it in another pot. And a name was drawn and whoever's name was drawn got that pot of money. And it had become a tradition that whoever got that pot of money was going to be able to go home, have enough money to go home for Christmas time and spend Christmas with their family. And so this particular year, they put their monies in the pot and they asked Kelly, this Franciscan monk, to draw the name out of the pot. And so he reached into the pot and he grabbed a whole handful of these slips of paper and he picked one out. And he opened it up and he read the name and it was Walter Jensen. And the workers just all started cheering and celebrating because they were all so happy for Walter. And he, you know, he was smiling and he was thrilled that he was going to be able to go home. And as this celebration broke out and got louder, then Kelly just, for something to do, he reached and opened the next name, and it was Walter Jensen. And he opened the next one, and it was Walter Jensen. And he opened the next one, and he started looking at them, and every single one of the workers had gotten together, and they wrote Walter Jensen's name on every one of them. That's the way that Jesus tells us to live. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. Do good to others. And whatever you do in Jesus' name, he said, I'll reward you handsomely for doing that. It's an incredible thing to live among people who live that way, whose interest is truly your welfare. It's an incredible thing to have people who love you and people who want to see you do well and people who want to see you happy and people who want to encourage you. And that's the Lord's family. The first shall be last and the last shall be first. If you always have to be first in life, if you always have to win, then I promise you, you'll never know the peace that goes beyond understanding. You'll never know what that is. But when you begin to slow down a little bit and take some deep breaths and prioritize your life and seek first the Lord and His kingdom, then you're going to begin to get some little glimpses of that peace and what that peace really is as you begin to put others before yourself. And you'll know something of the joy that the Lord offers. I want you to turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. And the setting here, even though it sounds a lot like the Sermon on the Mount, the setting here in verse 17 says that the Lord is on the plain, or on the level place here. And a large crowd gathers, and he says some really similar things to what he says in the Sermon on the Mount. But I want to begin reading in verse 27 and read a few verses here. And I want you to think of how easy it is to understand why people would come to Jesus and say, you're teaching some really hard things. I mean, they were simple things, but they were really difficult to put into practice. But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. He could stop right there and we could work on that for the rest of our life, couldn't we? Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you. If anyone takes what belongs to you, don't demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies. Do good to them. Lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you'll be sons of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Don't miss that one. Because He is kind to the ungrateful and wicked, be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, or you will be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, it will be poured into your bosom. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Boy, that's some tall orders, isn't it? That's some tough things to tell people to live by, to guide your life. If somebody comes up and strikes you, don't strike them back. That doesn't happen overnight, does it? Nothing natural about that. And as Jesus speaks to these crowds, it strikes me that everything that he says is summarized in three statements, or three principles, I guess would be a more accurate way to say it. And so we might not be able to, if your memory's like mine, you might not be able to remember all those things, but you can remember three things. And the first one is, be kind. Be kind. You want to know how to win friends and influence people and please God all at the same time? Be kind. And that's what he says in the first part of this. He has four short phrases. He says, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. And you can summarize those up with the principle is, be kind. That's four doses of the same medicine. Kindness. There was a couple that was once married for 15 years and they began to have some more than ordinary difficulties and disagreements. And they sat down and talked about it, realizing that this situation was getting out of hand. And so they devised this plan. It's kind of the wife's idea. But anyway, they came up with two shoeboxes. And they labeled them fault box. Each one had one. And they agreed that for a month, each one of them would, once a day, write down something about that their spouse that irritated them. Something that was bothering them. And they would write it on that slip of paper and put it in their fault box. And at the end of a month, they would swap those boxes and read it and talk about it. And so the wife was very diligent in her approach, and she, things like leaving the jar, the top off of the jelly jar, and leaving a wet towel on the bathroom floor, and not putting your dirty socks in the hamper, and on till the end of the month. And after dinner at the end of the month, they exchanged boxes, and the husband opened his box, and he's reflecting on the things that his wife had written. And then the wife opened her box, and she began reading, and the notes were all the same. Each one of them said, I love you. 30 different times. I love you. And the problems kind of dissolved. Kindness is a powerful motivator and not to be underestimated. And the second theme here is forgiveness. And in verse 37, there are three phrases. Do not judge. Do not condemn and forgive. Do not judge, do not condemn, and forgive. And the word forgiveness literally means, and we just recently had a really good study on that on Wednesday evenings, that the word literally means to release. Or in other words, we can say if you forgive, you let it go. Just let it go. Let go of it. And if we don't forgive, then we hold it really tightly, don't we? And we rehearse it and go over it and over it and over it in our lives. But when you forgive, you open your hands up and you let it go. And as we let it go, there's something really interesting that happens. Who, when you forgive, is released? Well, certainly the person, your enemy, who that you feel like owes you something or has done you some wrong, you release him. But in that process, you really find out that the value is that you're the one that gets released. You're the one that gets let go. It sets your mind and your emotions and your conscience and your life free. Because there's something about holding these grudges. There's something about being angry with someone that eats away at your insides. And it deteriorates your life and the quality of your life. Because that person is controlling you. And it very well may be a person that you don't have any respect for at all. And that's really kind of ironic that we would allow someone that we have very little respect for to rule our lives every day. Isn't that, don't you find that ironic? But if you just open your hands and open your heart and talk to your emotions and let it go, then it frees you. This forgiveness. I've read, and I don't know if this is true or not, it sounds kind of like one of those stories that whenever I look it up and try to check it out, it usually proves that it's not accurate, so I didn't look it up. I just like the story, okay? So anyway, I read that before Leonardo da Vinci was to paint the Last Supper, He had had a violent argument with a fellow painter, and he was so bitter about it toward this guy that he decided that his retaliation was going to be that he had been commissioned to paint this this important painting. And so when it got to Judas, he painted the face of this guy on Judas's face. And then as he continued on, everybody could recognize who the face was. And as he went on and he came to the face of Christ, and it just wasn't working for him. He couldn't make any progress, and there was something that was holding him back, and he struggled in frustration, and finally he came to the conclusion that what was blocking him from making any progress was the fact that he had painted his enemy's face as Judas in this painting. And so he went back and he just covered all that over and then proceeded on to Christ's face and was able to complete it. Now, that's probably not true. I don't know if it is or not, but I like the story, so I didn't check it out to see if it was true. It made a point that I wanted to make. But the moral of the story is that you cannot paint the features of Christ into your own life while at the same time you're painting someone else with anger and hatred. And then there's a third theme in this passage that we read, and that is that we learn to give. And in that verse 38 is kind of an interesting one, and the NIV has changed the word. It says, give and it will be given to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, be poured into your lap. Well, the word really is bosom. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense to us, but it would if we were in the Eastern culture, because as they wear this tunic and they wrap it in a certain way around their body, and they make a second wrap over this, and then they tie it up at the waist, then you have this opening right here that forms a big pocket. And so they would carry things in their tunic and in their bosom here. And it made a good large pocket that you could carry lots of things. And I really think how interesting it is that Jesus used this. It sounds like a kid that's saying how much candy he wants, you know, and you give him this thing and he's going to shake it. Have you ever done that? Somebody's giving you something. You want to make sure you get all you can get, so you take the container and you shake it and you mash it down and you do everything you can to get every bit that you can in it. Well, that's all the words that Jesus used there. It's just like this kid that's shaking this thing, you know, and somebody's giving you something, so you're shaking this thing and getting all the corners filled up and getting it all filled up. And he said that's the way that the Lord will give back to you when you give to someone. Then the Lord's going to say, here, open your pocket up here. You know, open this big pocket, and he starts pouring in here, and he is pressing it down for you, and he's shaking it, and he's filling up all the cracks for you. It's not you, it's him. He's going to give it to you in that way. And that's the way I want the Lord to give to me, don't you? I don't need just a little mercy or a little grace. I need a lot in my life. And so if I need a lot, if I want the Lord to give me things, and then he says, if you want the Lord to give you, then you give that way. And when you give to people, don't be stingy. Don't just give them a little bit. Don't just give enough to get by. But when you give it to them, just keep pouring it till it just shake it down and let it run over the sides. Give to people that way. And when you do that, then the Lord's going to give back to you that way. But sometimes we get afraid to give, don't we? We really do sometimes, and we get to thinking, well, you know, how about my family and how about my future and so forth, and we just use that as an excuse if we're not careful to keep piling it up beyond any reasonable need that we have. And then he gives the benefits of living this way, of being kind and forgiving and giving, and it's in verse 35, 37, and 38, and look at it. Here's the benefits. Your reward will be great. Verse 37, you will not be judged. Verse 37 again, you will not be condemned. Verse 37 again, you will be forgiven. And then verse 38, God will abundantly give to you. That's some pretty incredible blessings, folks. You won't be judged. You won't be condemned. Your reward will be great. You will be forgiven, and God will abundantly give to you until it's just pouring over the sides. If you follow Jesus' instructions for your life, then you're going to be building a life that's going to last eternally. And it's going to be able to overcome anything and everything that this world can dish out. And this world can dish out some stuff, can it? It can dish out some pain. But if you build your life on these things, then your life is going to withstand everything that happens. Now, that's not just my summary. That's the Lord's summary. Look at verse 47. I will show you what he is like who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice. He is like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. And when the flood came, the torrent struck that house but could not shake it because it was well built. Your life will last all the way to your death. It will be sure, it will be firm, it will be secure because it's built on the rock, the words of Jesus. And this world cannot shake it. It cannot cause it to crumble. And you don't have to fight to be first. You don't have to be the first one on the bus. You don't have to be the first one in line. You don't have to always win. You don't have to get the biggest piece. You can let the Lord take care of that. In fact, you can stand back and not have to judge everybody else. You can be released and forgiven. I don't know what the downside of it is. I guess maybe you're going to have to give up some pride. I guess maybe that's the downside. How much of a downside is that? Well, if you got lots of pride, it's a pretty big downside. And every one of us has to make that choice in our life. Are we willing to not always win and not always be first? Can we be last? Can we make a practice in our life of serving other people? And that's what Jesus offers. And the benefits are incredible. Peace, joy, and happiness in this life, and an eternal home in heaven when you die. That's Jesus' offer to you while we stand and sing.